Simple translation. The mitzvah that I'm commanding you today, it's not beyond you. It's not apart from you. It's within reach. It's not distant. You can do it. It's not up in the heavens where you think you need some magic to be able to get up to Shemayim. It's not across the sea. You can be there. You can access it. This matter, this pasuk, this mitzvah, it's very close. It is within your reach, in your mouth, and in your heart to perform it. Now, if you look through the psukim that are describing this mitzvah, that the message, of course, is that we can do it, we can handle it, it's accessible, is not actually delineated. There's no pasuk that tells you which mitzvah we're talking about. It could be any one of the 613. Some Rishonim learn, and this is the impression you get from Rashi. Rashi says we're talking about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The last line they have there, Kikor ve'lecha, Torah nitna lechem, b'chsav v'bal peh. It's on paper. It's oral. There's so many ways to learn Torah. It's accessible, and it's referring to Talmud Torah. But other Rishonim, the Ramban and the Sfarno, they learn that the pasuk here, ki mitzvah hazos, is talking about the mitzvah of tshuva. The mitzvah of tshuva is something that everybody can do and is not too difficult and not too much of a high level that one would suggest that they can't reach that point that they can do tshuva. So the question is obvious. Tshuva is not so easy. Tshuva is not something that we take for granted as being so accessible. If anything, we know what we're supposed to be doing in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but sometimes we're disturbed when we don't feel the inspiration. We have a whole month of Elul. Three quarters of Elul have passed. 75% of Elul is already behind us. That's a scary thought. It's a scary thought. Like we said the other day, maybe I didn't mention to you, right? This farm say that the last week of the year, each day, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos should be viewed as a day to do tshuva for the corresponding day over the course of the year. So it works out nice and smooth this year. Rosh Hashanah is on a Shabbos, so it means that this coming Shabbos is the last Shabbos of the year, the last Shabbos of Tav Shin Pei. So on this Shabbos, the person should be misakin his Chil Shabbos or improve his Shmir Shabbos for the entire year. Look back and see if there's any ways that you can improve. You can do a cheshbon nefesh to raise your standard of keeping Shabbos in contrast to the entire year prior, all the other Shabbosim. Sunday, this coming Sunday, look back at all the Sundays of the year. Sunday Shir, be misakin it. Make sure to be there on time, 8:30 Sunday night, because this is how I'm misakin all my Sundays of the previous year. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It all corresponds to the other 51 that we have already passed. So this is a time of tshuva, and we're down to the wire. We don't really feel, even here in the shofar every morning, hopefully, we don't feel like totally turned on to tshuva. So Chaim Shalom Levitz asks this question. How does the pasuk in one breath tell us it's so accessible, but at the same time, we don't feel as inspired? So he says, there's obviously, there's something we're missing. There's something that we need to activate in order to identify with what the pasuk is describing. And the way he puts it is like this. The average person isn't inspired to do tshuva, mainly because that person is accustomed to his ways. The person doesn't even realize sometimes where they're holding and how low they've sunk. Even for that individual person, we're not talking about sinking so low, but everyone has something to correct. Everyone has something to improve upon. But when we're acclimated, when we're conditioned to accept a certain reality as my reality, this is who I am, so it's hard to break from that, but it's even hard to notice that there's anything to improve. Cheshbon HaNefesh, going through the Al Chetz, which is what we got to do now, going through the Vidui, Ashamnu, Baganu, learning the translations and actually stopping and say, whoa, Gazalnu, did I get my tax returns with the accuracy that I'm supposed to have? Was I engaged in anything that's a little bit shady? Okay, that hopefully you don't have to worry about those things yet. But you may come to that. Someone just told me they're moving to Eretz Yisrael. Moving to Eretz Yisrael. So when you move to Eretz Yisrael, you have a lift. You bring all your furniture, all your appliances, all your clothing. Send it on a boat to get to Eretz Yisrael. There are a lot of zechuyot when you move to Eretz Yisrael, the Israeli government makes it very easy for you. A lot of tax breaks, a lot of privileges. You can bring in American mattresses, and it won't cost you anything more than, you know, just the price of purchasing in America. No custom fees and so forth. So person was telling me they're making Aliyah right after Yontif, and they're inundated with calls. Can you bring this? Can you bring that? Can you include this in your lift? Can you include that in your lift? And it's cheating. It's cheating the government because those people don't have those chuyot. But if it comes with my lift, then he's not going to have to pay taxes on his American mattress. So, and they come up with all kinds of reasons why really it's okay. And I heard from this one, and someone told me fourth hand from Rav Asher Weiss that it's really okay. And the person told me that sometimes they're almost like threatening phone calls. Like, what is the matter with you? Why won't you just do this for me? And he's like, I would be more than happy to get to Israel and buy you a mattress. Happy birthday. But I can't put it on my lift and cheat the government. Gazalno. I hope that person wakes up for whatever other corners they may have cut in their fair business dealings or in taxes and realize Gazalno. Okay, just because you've always been doing that doesn't mean it has to continue. But we're very comfortable and subconsciously we feel that whatever we're doing is right. But if you'd put us on the sidelines to watch my life, watch the replay, like from outside, from the side of the field. Sometimes that provides a moment of epiphany. Correct me if I'm wrong, Abosai. You know, this is just one pop culture, maybe a reference to make this real. I remember as a kid, you know, in December 25th season, isn't like that the whole vort and the yisod of Scrooge? No, isn't it Mr. Scrooge? Isn't that like he was mean to everybody and they had to take him outside of himself and watch the ghost of the past and ghost of the future so that he would realize what he was, how he was behaving? Jeremy, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, the Christmas Carol. Yeah, that is the
Thank mystery. You. Okay, so this takes me back a good 35 years.
The ghost of Nitelnach past.
You know? Nitelnach past. Thank you very much. The ghost of Nitelnach, right? So they take him outside of himself so he can actually watch the movie of his life so that he'll realize, wait a minute, like I actually behave that way. I'm actually such a cruel person. I'm actually so mean to other human beings, right? That's when you have this moment of epiphany because you're no longer blinded by the status quo. And if we had those moments, which by the way, those moments are called cheshbon hanefesh, when you take an accounting of myself. So then you'd realize that maybe all is not in order and some changes need to be made, right? We know like someone hits rock bottom, substance abuse, he's an alcoholic or something like that, right? So suddenly they realize how low they've gone and how low they've reached. And it's only then at those moments that they can try to question themselves, to brush themselves off and pick themselves up when they start asking questions. Is this really what I want? Is this really who I am? Is this really all I'm capable of? Is this what my life is going to look like? But before that, there's no shyness. Before that, before we hit rock bottom, before a person is jarred just into waking up in Avodas Hashem, like think about the story we heard yesterday, right? Person needed to be on Ben Yehuda on a Friday night with his cell phone to suddenly feel like, whoa, this is really weird. I don't feel, I need to hide. I'm in a holy city right now. I'm capable of being so much more than this. If you didn't hear it yesterday, please let me know. I will share with you the recording. It was very powerful. And to pick myself up and say, wait a minute, is this really who I am? But before there are those shilohs, before you ask those critical questions about yourself, so then the status quo feels really good. Only when you ask the questions, then you can realize where you are, and the questions can lead to a turnaround. The same, Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz explains, is true in spirituality. Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz is the author of the Sichas Musar. I'm sure many of you are familiar. Sichas Musar was published in the 70s, 80s, but then republished in 2002. Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz was Rashiv of the Mir, and there was a tekufa when the Mashkiach was sick, and he took over giving the weekly parsha, Musar Shmuz and Yeshiva, and they were shmuzin that were popular and spread throughout the world and became ultimately his Talmud and put it into a sefer because each one contains basic core aspects of Avodas Hashem. So that's what he says. In spirituality, we get used to ourselves too. Just like the alcoholic doesn't see anything out of the reality he lives in, getting drunk every night and being gambler just wastes his money because that's where he sees himself. So we're complacent. In ruchnius, we get used to ourselves. And unfortunately, we get stuck and we can't do tshuva. We don't feel inspired to do tshuva until we're able to ask ourselves the same tough questions about who and what we are and what we're doing. If you remember from last week, this is like the story of Reb Elazar ben Dordaya, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the man who went to find every single zone in the world until she gave him some mussar. And that suddenly made him hit rock bottom and realize, I can ask this person about that person, that person, but once I realize who I am and where I'm holding, ain hadavar tali al bi. Suddenly he picks himself up and says, it's all up to me. I can't count on anybody else. I can't expect anyone else to fix my situation. Ain hadavar tali al bi. And it earned him a one-way ticket straight to Gan Eden. In Parshas Vayigash, Chaim Shmulevitz, a different shmuz, has a famous analysis of the story of Yosef and his brothers that brings out this point as well. Yosef and his brothers for 22 years lived with the ghost, the skeleton in the closet that they sold their brother into slavery. He disappeared. We don't know where he was. There are some Rashis that indicate they came to Mitzrayim, they were going to try to find him. But at the same time, we don't get the impression until that later stage that they were even thinking about him. They didn't have enough remorse to act on trying to locate him at an earlier point. And whatever cruelty, not questioning them, there are various pshatim in why they did what they did and why they thought what they did was right at the time. At their level, it was still wrong. But we don't see that there was a major tshuva movement until the end. Suddenly, he reveals himself. Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, and they're devastated. They're shocked. They can't say anything. And even after Yaakov is dead, they're still trying to make up with him. But what was the turning point? Yosef says, "Ani Yosef ha'od avichai. Ani Yosef ha'od avichai. I am Yosef. Is my father still alive?" Two questions. The Medrash looks at this and says, "Oh my gosh. How are we going to handle the day of judgment and the day when we are rebuked in Shemayim?" That is the Midrash's reaction to that episode. What rebuke? Where do you see any judgment or rebuke on the part of Yosef? Yosef just revealed himself. He didn't criticize them. He didn't say, "Hey guys, I'm the one you sent to Mitzrayim. You sold me to slavery." He doesn't say anything like that. He just says, "Is my father still alive?" It seems like a harmless question, right? Question number two is, why is Yosef asking, "Is my father still alive?" If you read what the whole progression leading up to that moment, they're talking about Yaakov constantly. That's the whole subject of the conversation. "We got to bring Binyamin back. Please let us go. We have an old father, Nafsho Kshuper Nafsho. He's tied inextricably by his soul to this young son. Please let us bring him back to Eretz Yisrael. Don't detain us here." So why is Yosef asking, "Is my father still alive?" Explains Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Yosef gave him the ultimate rebuke, the ultimate mussar, in those few words. What was the mussar? The mussar wasn't Yosef asking, "Is my father still alive?" He knew his father was still alive. That was obvious. You know what that question was? The question was, "Hey, you're so desperate. You're coming to me. You're prostrating yourself before me. You're in desperation. Let us go, because otherwise our father will die. He won't be able to handle the devastation of not having Binyamin back. Hello, what were you thinking when you sold me, the ben zakunim, the closest son to Yaakov? What am I, chopped liver? You sold me. Were you thinking about your father's emotions and about his old age and his sensitivity? You told him, 'Sorry, pa. Your son was torn apart and killed by a wild animal.' Where's your sensitivity? All of a sudden, you guys are big tzaddikim. Oh, we have to bring Binyamin back. How could we return to our father without his young son? And what about me? Did you care when you sold me into slavery?" It was a rhetorical question. He knew his father was still alive, and that was the rebuke. That was the mussar. The mussar was, "You guys are living a lie. You guys are living a major internal self-contradiction." And in Shemayim, at the end of our lives, that's what they're going to do also. They're going to show us the video. "Reb Yid, how come you didn't give more to tzedakah?" "Oh yeah, I had to pay for tuition. I had to pay for my rent. I had to pay for my car. I had to pay for health insurance." "Oh yeah? You had to pay for the trip to Puerto Rico also. You had enough money for that. Where was the money for the tzedakah? Not saying a person shouldn't go on a vacation. Of course they should. You got to do what you got to do. You need that. You need to recharge. You need to be, but you need to go to Puerto Rico and you left over nothing left for the tzedakah. You got to be able to do according to your own means in the same way that you're taking a vacation according to your own means. But how do we spend our time? I have no time to learn. Okay, you have time for football, right? All these questions, whatever it happens to be, those are just my favorite examples. But we're going to be asked, whatever you have to say in response, in defense of yourself, are you consistent? Ask those critical questions. Ask yourself those questions now. That is Elul. That is Elul. Looking inward and asking, wait a minute, is this who I am? Is this where I want to be? Is this where I want to be going? And correct those aspects. You don't have to take it all on at one time. But to focus during Elul one day at a time, 5 minutes, do a cheshbon nefesh, look through an hashtam, look through al-chayt, and ask yourself the critical questions that can inspire the turnaround. And that's how tshuva becomes something that's in our reach, karov elecha hadavar ma'od, something that we can achieve and something which is not too far, lo rachuk, it's not in Shemayim, it's not across the sea. We can do tshuva and we can be inspired. Let me share with you unbelievable story. Unbelievable story. One of my favorite English books, Relevance by Rabbi Don Roth. Great story. Page 43. Apollo 9 astronaut Rusty Schweikert reminisced about a special moment in his life that occurred as he was floating outside the spacecraft testing equipment. His fellow astronaut, Dave Scott, had been photographing him when suddenly the camera jammed. Scott had to return to the capsule to repair the camera. That left Schweikert dangling alone for a few introspective moments. Now, what does that mean he was dangling? Do you know how fast a spacecraft orbiting the Earth travels? 17,000 miles per hour. 17,000 miles per hour, okay? So he's hanging there, going faster than you could possibly imagine around the Earth in absolute silence. And he's looking down on the beautiful blue, green, white of our planet. And they asked him, so what was going through your head in absolute silence, 70,000 miles per hour over the globe? He said, questions. What does this mean? How did I get here? Who am I? All right, Matt, picture yourself in that moment, just silence, floating over the Earth and taking it all in and taking your life in. I'm this tiny human being in this unfathomable universe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and what am I doing here? Those are questions. Those are deep, deep questions. But when we don't ask those questions, we don't begin to think on a critical level in a way that can really make us change. That's what Chaim Shmulevitz is telling us, is where tshuva begins. Ask those questions. A few examples where we see in Tanakh and in Chazal that those questions are an educational tool that allow us to progress and allow us to find new meaning and discover things that otherwise we wouldn't have even begun such analysis. Simple example, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Every one of us knows the story, okay? Since we're very little in kindergarten, we know about the frogs in his bed, frogs on his head, frogs here, frogs there. It's very familiar. From the time you're very young, those are the basic stories we grew up with as Jews. Nevertheless, the night of the Seder is the most important moment for transmitting emuna, and there's hareza meshubach for anyone who's marbel l'safra b'tzias Mitzrayim. So how do you get into a story that you already know the beginning, the middle, and the end of? So the answer is we start the story with a manishtana, with questions, because psychologically, and developmentally, even at a very young age, and it's true even as we progress, when we're forced, when we make ourselves plant ourselves down at the table, open up the book and read carefully and start by asking questions, then we reveal new things we didn't notice before. There's no such thing as a Pesach without a new vort, without a new Haggadah, without seeing something you didn't realize before, without experiencing Midrashim that we're so familiar to, but now I care to look at them inside. When we begin the process with questions, so then there's a greater interest. There's a probing that has us look more closely, and we discover things we didn't realize before. Great, great raya, Reb Chaim Shalom Atatz from a Gemara in Kedushin. If you're not familiar with this Gemara, it's core. It's critical for this time of year. You should know it anyway. Gemara says in Kedushin, Amar Rav Huna, Kevin Sha'avar Adam Aveir of Ashanaba Huchalo. Simple translation. I'll put it in the chat for you to see. Once a person does an Aveir, Rav Huna says, it becomes mutter for him. Kevin Sha'avar Adam Aveir of Ashanaba, he does the Aveir, and then he does it again. He stumbles a second time, Huchalo. It becomes mutter for him. Frank the Gemara, Huchalo, Sagadaitach, Rav Huna himself, as it were. Do you really think you mean it's mutter? Just because you did it twice? Strike one, strike two, magic. Now it's mutter. Strike that one off the list. No. Ela nicest lokahetzer. Nicest lokahetzer. It becomes as if it's mutter. He is desensitized. We all know what that's like. Something which is distant from us because we blocked it out from our koach ha-bechira. It's beneath our line of bechira. I would never have avim to do something like that. But if, God forbid, a person stumbles and does that avera, unfortunately, it's easier for him to do it. Easier for him to do it the next time. Nasis lokat. It's as if it's much for him because he's broken down a little bit of his defenses against the Yetzer Hara. Okay, that's Rav Huna's Muster Shmuz. Powerful Muster Shmuz. Frater B'chaim Shalom Etzakasha. Rav Huna, you knew the punchline. You knew what you were really trying to tell us. What you really meant was if a person doesn't have it becomes harder to have his guard up the next time. So why don't you just say that from the beginning? Why do you have to say, if a person does an Aveira, then he does it again, then it's mutter for him. Oh, you think I really mean it's mutter for him? No, I don't really mean that. I mean that it becomes easier for him to stumble. Say what you mean and mean what you say the first time. Explains Reb Chaim. No, it's pashut. It's pashut. Ask the question, because then you're going to get everybody's attention. Right? When you give me something which demands my scrutiny, so that I'll fire back with, what do you mean? What are you talking about? So then when the answer comes, it'll stay with me more. It's going to go into my bones because I had anticipation. My saliva was flowing. I needed to know the answer. You wet my appetite. So we have to wet our own appetites. The avodah of Elul, the avodah of Cheshbon HaNefesh is to get excited about the questions that will reveal to us and discover who we are, who we want to be, who we need to be, and then ultimately what we need to get there. But you can't start without step one. Ask those questions. Make time during Elul. You don't have to be flying in a spacecraft over the earth. You just need a quiet room and a few minutes of your phone being off or being somewhere else where you won't be distracted, and a pen and a paper, and maybe your machzer. Maybe Yom Kippur Machzor. Look at the Mincha of Erev Yom Kippur and read through the Al-Chetz. Turn to the back of the Art Scroll Machzor where it goes through one by one. And you know what? Over the next few days, just choose two or three. Two or three each day. And ask those questions. Where can I improve? Where can I break from the status quo of assuming the way I am now is the way I'm supposed to be? Because there's always room to grow. Because Baruch Hu should be Mezakas. That could be Matzliach. To do that. And to grow, and next year find ourselves being able to ask different questions and new questions, because we've already conquered the questions from this year.